All right. Thanks again for coming to our session on soil synergy. And we're going to start again with some talks about soil biology and nutrient availability.
So, thank you.
Thank you.
So my name's Satdarshan Khalsa. I'm a researcher at UC Davis. So I was thinking about this session, and I was like, well, we know that soil biology is a large benefit from using materials like organic matter amendments. So that's the focus of what I'm going to talk about today in orchards. But then there's also a large role for nutrients and the availability of those nutrients. So I wanted to see if there was any way in the study that I was doing, in the trials that I'm doing, to see if there's any linkages between those two concepts. So here we go. So some of my working hypotheses are quite simple. By applying organic matter at relatively low rates, this 9 tons per hectare is about 4 or 5 tons per acre. It's not a large amount, and you'll see in the next picture. How does that affect nutrient cycling? And in doing so, changing total inorganic pools of nitrogen, phosphorus, and carbon. And then also, this role of soil biology. So I did a large survey of almond growers in California and asked them, well, if you use these types of materials and you apply them to your land, what do you think the largest response is, where you're going to see the effects? And overwhelmingly, growers said, well, I think the benefit is really going to soil biology. But what does that actually mean is a whole different question. So I wanted to explore how that related to nutrient availability. So we did different measures of indices, and I'll present this sort of top 5 bacteria species that were present. So these hypotheses are then working into other sort of applied questions on the sort of the farmer level. So does annual application sustain nutrient pools? So if you're applying it over time, are those pools going to kind of sustain? Are they going to increase or decrease? And how does that change diversity? And then is there a link between those nutrients and soil biology? So I want to preface this with, in California, there's a large availability of this type of material. So CalRecycle has made it mandatory that green waste is diverted from landfills and now needs to be composted, and that's happening in the Central Valley, so it's available to farmers now. And then at the same time, with regulations for groundwater and the movement of nitrate into groundwater, dairy farmers are restricted on how much manure they can apply to their land. So that makes it so that almond orchards, which are abundant throughout the Central Valley and are high users of nitrogen and potassium mainly, and we looked at phosphorus, but potassium is a large use that are in these materials. Is there a way that we can use this material eventually to sort of substitute those high amounts of fertilizer use? So that's kind of where we're moving in the future with this work. But currently, we just wanted to look at, well, if we apply to an orchard and the grower continues to fertilize like he would fertilize, so the control in these, the control measurement is fertilizer on its own, and then the other treatments are the material, either compost and manure or green waste compost, in addition to fertilizer. So it's all supplement. It's all on top of what the grower's applying. Essentially, because there's a lot of talk in the previous sessions about no-till and living roots and that kind of thing, by default, orchards in California are that. These are not tilled, and the trees are always there. And then this is typically an irrigation system that goes along the line. So where this material is applied here on the berm, it's as a mulch, it's not tilled in, and then it's going to be wetted during the course of the growing season. So my approach on measuring nutrient availability is so. So if this was typically rooting of a young tree, the rooting of almond tree would go significantly deeper. But in the top 50 centimeters, this is where we talk about where the wetting front of irrigation water moves, and we find a lot of availability of nutrients. We did 2 approaches with resins. So we used similar PRS probes to look at availability of nutrients in this topsoil, the top 10 centimeters. That's ammonium plus nitrate and phosphate, and in addition to that, how much is moving down through in a core that I put into the ground that excluded roots, and essentially these resin beads at the bottom, how much cumulative amount of nutrients are adhering to these beads over the course of a growing season. So what happens is, in a control, fertilizer is applied. As I change out these stakes during the course of the season, fertilizer adsorbs to the resin membranes, and water moves through, and then also it adsorbs to the resin beads. So you get kind of a measurement by depth of where nutrients are available. And then in the treatment, you can see a mulch on top of the surface here, and the same type of effect, same type of measurements. So we did soil analyses of total nutrient pools, as I mentioned here, inorganic availability using these PRS probes from Western Ag Innovations, and then using resin beads within a core for looking at the whole depth and what happens over the course of a whole growing season of 6 months. And then I worked with a colleague who did 16 RS gene sequencing, looking at different indices and top bacteria species. In putting this, I realized that a lot of them are archaea, so they're not really, they're archaea and bacteria. And then I did some fumigation extraction for microbial biomass as well. So the rest of the tables in this presentation will look as so. So the first one here, we're looking at treatment. So as I mentioned, the control is just fertilizer applied by a grower. Compost and manure is the same rate of fertilizer, but then that mulched amount of 9 tons per hectare of compost and manure. And then green waste compost is the same rate, but also fertilizer being applied as NSO. And then we did this work in 2015 and 2016. I presented in a symposium last year where I presented this data, so I'm following up this year with our second year. So what you can see is in the first year, we saw that the total nitrogen pool significantly increased. There was no difference in the total phosphorus pools, and we saw the same effect with the total organic carbon. There's a lot of carbonates in California soil, so I have to remove those, so that's why I report total organic carbon. This is for the whole 50 centimeter depth. So that looked all good and well, and I'm like, well, we got some great results, we're increasing organic matter, and then we did the experiment again, and then all those sort of differences kind of disappeared. So the compost and manure was quite a bit lower. The green waste compost decreased, but was no different from the control. Again, really no effect with total phosphorus, and then the same thing happened with total organic carbon, which led me to believe that, well, this soil in the first year, that there was no organic matter applied to this orchard for probably a decade or more. So we had a real bump in the first year, and the second year we just kind of did not see that same effect. And in fact, the compost and manure almost decreased it in a way. If we look at the total or inorganic nutrients, nitrogen, which is ammonium and nitrate added together, and phosphate, what we see is that for the compost manure in the first year, we see this huge bump in phosphorus. So there's a large amount of phosphorus being available from the compost and manure. No differences within the nitrogen, but you can see that they're actually lower. Again, this is in that topsoil part. So what happens is that I'm hypothesizing that, well, there's some sort of immobilization going on of that nitrogen as it becomes available. In 2016, we had an effect. That effect of compost and manure on phosphorus was no longer there. It was higher, but it was just no longer there for one other reason. And I looked at the profile of the material I applied. I got it from the same dairy farmer, the same pile, and they were all very similar. So I was like, well, if the nutrients affects, maybe there's something going on with the soil biology. And we'll get into that. When it came to the nitrogen, we saw that in the topsoil here, we're still seeing lower nitrogen availability, not significantly different in the inputs here, but that difference became smaller. So see, that's about 100 and 300, and that's about 300 and 800 or so. So what's happening with the compost and manure effect for that immobilization is no longer present in 2016. If we look at the total amount of nutrients that move through that core during the course of the season and looked at milligrams of N and P, so that's how much it stuck onto resin beads as the water passed through that core, we see that for nitrogen, they were not different, but they were greater, which makes sense, right? There's more nitrogen becoming available for the course of that season. So in that topsoil, we could have some immobilization going on from increases in total organic matter in general. But as that amount passes through the soil, there is still going to be more nitrogen available. No differences in phosphate. And then what we see in those differences, similar, but with the reverse in terms of total availability, is no differences here as well, but we can see that there's more nitrogen being available. So that could be sort of another compounding effect. So the nitrogen that was not available in 2015 is now becoming available in 2016. So again, when we speak to growers about applying materials, a lot of folks want to think about it in an annual cycle, but really not. Because if you apply it in 2015, some that you applied in 2015 is going to be available in 2016, et cetera. So these are just some brief overviews of taxonomic units and different indices of microbial diversity. So what we saw with the compost and manure, I just want to focus on that, really a high number of taxonomic units, so a large diversity in that first year, but then decreased again in the second year. Same thing with a lot of these indices, where it was higher than both the other control and the other treatment, and then lower, and the same with the Simpson index. So the Simpson would weight more like larger amounts of general species, and Shannon would probably do more diversity overall. And then what we saw with the green waste compost is it was similar to the control in the first year, but in the second year it got quite a bit larger. So another lesson to take home, and I talk to growers as well, is that these two materials, though they're kind of, we talk about organic matter amendments, they're very different materials. So if you're putting manure or you're putting compost down, they're going to be a very different effects on the nutrients. They have slightly different nutrient profiles, but you can see the effects on the microbiology are also there as well. So this is a breakdown of sort of the top five species of bacteria or archaea. So the reason I put this up there is because I wanted to convey this point. What I didn't show is that when we did the same type of measurement on the material itself, there were these large different species, and they were completely different between the two. And then you think, well, if we're inoculating the soil with those species, maybe we would see them in the soil. But that's actually not the case. The reality is that the dominant species that are in the controls and the are the same in the compost and manure and the green waste compost. So the idea that microbial communities are coming from materials and then inoculating them to the soil and then they're sort of dominant, that's not exactly what's happening. The dominant species are still the dominant species. But we saw with diversity indices that they're changing. So there are sort of other species probably lower down on the overall abundance that are sort of becoming available. So the question is, how does that really relate to nutrient availability? So I'm seeing some trends here with the changes in carbon, nitrogen, and phosphorus, but I'm not necessarily seeing that with the overall bacteria that are available. Are present. So for example, in 2015, we see the species of iron oxidizing bacteria that's quite prevalent, and then in 2016, it's not even in the top 25. It's just completely dropped off. So it's kind of just, again, evidence that we might be seeing difference in nutrients, what is actually happening with the biology. Same thing here with the green waste compost, very similar profile to what we saw here in the control for 2016, but then another species here jumps in, is highly abundant. Again, that this species was not even in the top 25 of any of the other treatments. So some conclusions. We see a significant increase in total organic nitrogen and carbon in year one, but that effect wasn't sustained in year two. There was lower nitrogen availability in year one. However, we're getting increasing nitrogen availability in year two. The P availability was high in year one, but not in two. And these diversity indices followed similar trends compared to the nutrients in terms of, we see some effects and then the effects kind of go away in the second year. But there's really obviously no direct link between the two. As I said, the top species were largely similar with some exceptions that I made. And then that question about microbial biomass, I looked at that and I did not show that data, but there were no differences in the microbial biomass between the in the soil of those treatments. So I want to acknowledge my co-authors and other folks who supported the research, and thank you all for your time.
One or two really quick questions.
Yeah, so the top, out of all these top species here, they're bacteria and archaea, they're all ammonium oxidizing bacteria. So they're really a present and available. So as organic matter is breaking down, they're going to be oxidizing ammonium into nitrate, and that's why we would see higher nitrate availability as the years progress. So they're really the dominant species, and by applying material or not, they're still the dominant species. So the question then arises, well, what's happening to the diversity on the species that are 10 through 25 and all the other species down the totem pole?
Okay.
There was another question? Yes.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about the fact that so many of your top species are nitrogen cycling bacteria, and why that is. That's a little bit different from what we see.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'd have to. I look forward to digging into the literature and to other systems to see what effects there are. Bruce?
Any differences in crop performance between
these? They're all non-bearing orchards. So there's a huge. Oh no, there were no effects on leaf nitrogen. There are other with some other micronutrients like potassium, but it's the first couple of years, so we're still working towards that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.